And now coming to you nearly live from a mineshaft beneath Virginia City in Story County, it's the Storyteller Podcast. My name is Sam Toll. I'm your host. And before I get started with today's interview with Danny Tarkanian, I'd like to just reach out to listeners and ask them that if they enjoy and appreciate the work and the effort that we're doing here at the Storyteller, to, at the very least, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell another Story County resident about what we're doing and share the word. The more eyeballs that are on the issues within Story County, the better chance we have of making positive change. Many folks accuse me of railing against the machine, raging against the machine, and never really having a good thing to say. That's not the case, but there's so much here that happens at the expense of the general public to benefit a very few select chosen folks that it just wears on me, and I certainly won't sit still for it. I know I get approached by folks who I've never met before, who I've never heard of, who come to me and tell me how much they appreciate the work we're doing here, how much they enjoy a person who can speak without fear, who has no job to lose or kids to be hassled in school because of their, you know, stepping up and being counted, being heard, and speaking out against what's wrong in this county. So that's my job. I'm trying to pose as much stuff, talk about as many things. There's an awful lot of work to be done. So if you could just share this podcast, share the Storyteller itself, sign up for the email notices when I post something new, and get the word out, I'd be very grateful. So now, without any further ado, it's my interview with Danny Tarkanian, hopeful for United States Senate, going to run against Dean Heller in the June primary. Sam Toll here from the Storyteller with Danny Tarkanian, the candidate for United States Senate. Danny, I had the pleasure of talking to you in Dayton the other day and listening to some of the things that you were hoping to bring to Washington. Tell us a little bit about what it is that makes you different from Mr. Heller and what it is, what your vision is of taking Nevada's voice to Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you. First of all, this is the best name of any media outlet, Storyteller, huh? The biggest difference between Dean Heller and myself is that I have true convictions for what I believe in. I've always stood by those convictions. I hope that the constituents here in Nevada like most of what I say. There's going to be some things you may not like, but whatever you hear from me is my honest opinion, and I have the courage to stand by those convictions and fight for those when I go back to Washington, D.C. I've been a fighter my whole life, and I've also worked as a captain and a leader in different stuff from school to sports to my profession, and I am very confident if I can get back to Washington, D.C., I could use that leadership skills along with the tenacity of being a fighter to get things accomplished that I actually campaigned on. Now, it's a complete opposite with Dean Heller. I personally have a good relationship with Dean and don't have any personal animosity towards him, but I think it's pretty clear he doesn't have true convictions in his positions because he keeps changing them from one to another. And he does it based upon who he's talking in front of. And that's the biggest difference between us. And when I first decided to run for office, the one thing, I was recruited to run in this Senate seat by a lot of people, at least 100 plus, that had contacted me. And the one thing they kept saying over and over again is, we're sick and tired of politicians who say one thing when they campaign for office and go back to Washington and do the exact opposite. And we need somebody in there that won't do that. And I think clearly I'm that kind of person.
Thank you. So one of the things that struck me about what your message was in Dayton in front of the folks down there was the notion that our country, you know, really in the Republican Party has sort of not really unified or come behind President Trump. One of his messages was to drain the swamp. And as a person who, you know, I'm a cynic and I look for cracks in people's arguments. One of the things that I, you know, look for is Goldman Sachs still have an influence over our country? Do the lobbyists still slow things down and prevent progress from happening? You know, are the swamp monsters still lurking there? And sadly, I think they are. Now, you've been a vocal supporter of Trump, and one of the things that differentiates Mr. Heller from the standard, or I guess from falling into line behind the president, is that he was a never-Trumper. Explain to me a little bit about what it is that makes you loyal to Donald Trump, or if even that's an accurate assessment of what you said.
Sure, and I'm going to make sure I clarify that. I'm an avid supporter of President Trump's America First policies, which I think the vast majority of Americans feel that way, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent. I think President, or at that time was Donald Trump, articulated that phrase, and then he had the courage to really go after people by saying this is what he was going to do to protect the American interests first and foremost. And that's what I believe. And I think our country for too long has tried to expand itself globally. It's left behind the interests of hardworking middle-class Americans. Virtually every major piece of legislation, let's not say every, a lot of the major pieces of legislation we see is another burden and taxation or cost to the middle-class hardworking Americans who don't get federal subsidies and don't have the big financial money to influence the lobbyists to get special exceptions placed in bills. And Donald Trump talked about that continually during the campaign trail, and that really resonated with me.
So one of the things that you would face as a freshman senator, certainly being one of the in a group of 100 of the most influential people in the world, would be the lack of contacts and the lack of traction to get things done. What would you do? What would be one of your approaches as a freshman senator from Nevada to really impact the country, not just Nevada, but to take this entire country in a direction that, sort of heals us from some of the wounds that we've been licking over the last little bit of time?
Well, I think if you're looking at somebody who's been in Washington, D.C. and has the connections, and I heard Dean Heller say this on TV last night, his seniority with the different positions, and you're happy with what's going on in D.C., then you elect somebody who has that seniority and that experience. But if you want to see things change, which is what Donald Trump had campaigned on, draining the swamp, and you need to elect people that aren't part of that political corruption or the Washington establishment way of life, and someone's going to stand up to them and have the courage to go against some of those votes. And I certainly have that. It's been widely reported that there's going to be a number of insurgent candidates throughout the country running in Republican primaries, and their argument's going to be, hey, we need to change what's going on in Washington, D.C., drain the swamp, get the establishment out of there, and make substantive changes. And I look forward to being one of the successful ones of those and going back to Washington, D.C. and getting that done.
Well, that's music to my ears, because, the little tiny blip on the United States map that is the Beltway really does have a distorted sense of reality. And I think that a voice from the desert of Nevada might do good. I'm going to ask you two questions on two statements that you made at that Dayton town hall that I listened to that were what I would consider to be out of the box or potentially even controversial statements. The first one is that you'd expressed an interest in bringing our troops home, and while still maintaining the superiority of our military that we've enjoyed over since World War II, stop being the world's policeman. Can you share a little bit about that idea with us?
Sure, and I made it clear that I believe we need to invest in our military so that we have the world's greatest, not only men and women that are fighting, but technology and equipment. But we shouldn't be going overseas and imposing our will upon countries that don't want us there and don't have an interest in what we're doing, and where they're trying to do regimen change. And you've seen that across the board. I believe I was very strongly against the Iraq War. One of the few friends of mine that would come out and actually say that when it first happened, because we had no business to being in the Iraq War. There wasn't anything, there was no substantial imminent threat to our national security, which is the threshold it should be before we get involved. And then President Obama took it further by eliminating leaders in Libya and Syria, or trying in Syria and in Egypt. And look what we have right now. We have chaos. So we're spending trillions of dollars, at least hundreds of billions of dollars. It's gotten into the trillions from all these wars. We've lost thousands of Americans' lives, and what have we gotten for it? We need to take care of Americans. So this goes back to America First policies. Take care of our country first, unless there is an imminent threat of our national security.
Thank you for that. And then finally, the notion or the idea that Yucca Mountain should be a thing. It's really interesting to recognize that nuclear waste is in existence and being housed within sight of large metropolitan cities across the country. And this would give Nevada an opportunity to be a problem solver at the same time, you know, sort of kickstarting, or not kickstarting, but giving our economy a boost and really kind of making us the leaders in green technology. Share a little bit about that idea with us.
You're absolutely right in every single thing you said. First and foremost, we have a serious risk of some type of national catastrophe because we have, at one time, there's over 100 above-site areas that were storing nuclear spent fuel, most of them in major metropolitan areas. And one that, if you go drive to San Diego, there's that nuclear plant that's right outside of San Diego. And if you're thinking, as a terrorist, that you want to commit a huge catastrophe, that those are the ones that are most susceptible. So we have a problem that needs to be resolved. Second of all, nuclear energy is the cleanest energy of them all. So when you have all these people that are for climate change, well, the argument should be, hey, let's do it with nuclear spent fuel. If there's a way to do that without endangering our society, and there certainly is. If you look at France and other countries, they reprocess 95% of their nuclear spent fuel and use it to provide more energy. My position with Yucca Mountains has been and will always be is that we should turn into a reprocessing facility, get rid of the 95-98% of nuclear spent fuel we have in our country, sell it out as a surplus. That revenue would be money that could come into the state of Nevada. That, along with $100 billion construction project it would cost to build the thing, would create all the money we need for the expansion of Medicaid that Dean Heller seems to be so concerned about, and certainly would be enough money for our education system, which Governor Sandoval has been trying to enlarge. The only risk that the Democrats keep saying is that there could be a accident with the transportation of that. Well, look, they've been transferring nuclear spent fuel into the state of Nevada for decades now, decades. We just don't know it publicly because they don't talk about it much, and there hasn't been one accident yet. The biggest risk we have as a country is if something happens to one of those above-ground storage facilities. We could turn Yucca Mountain into the leading research and development for alternative energies in the whole world, and Nevada would be the hub of all that. It's a win-win for everybody.
Okay, I'm going to conclude our interview with what I consider to be the biggest problem with the biggest impact on every citizen in that faces our country, and that is the national debt. Donald Trump was forced to extend the debt ceiling to $20 trillion when he first took office, and that's the credit card that our kids are going to have to pay off. What's your perspective on that debt, and what's your shooting from the hip idea of how we might be able to wrangle that down?
It is one of the major problems that are out there, and what people don't realize is where the impact's going to be, and it's going to be to the lower to middle class people, because we're not going to default on our debt. We're just going to keep printing money. When we keep printing money, the value of your dollar decreases, so it hits the less well-to-do people the most. Maybe that's why our government keeps doing it, because the wealthy keep running and making those decisions. We need, the first and foremost thing is, we have to get our economy going much better than it is now, from a 1.6% average GDP to, Trump is looking for at least a 3%, maybe a 4% if we can get that going. That would help reduce the debt some. We need to make some tough choices on some of the things that are out there right now with our spending, and that includes the Medicare and Social Security issues. I've advocated increasing the age of Social Security after we give a period of time to let people know that this is going to happen. I'm not saying we change it today for people that are about to get to Social Security, but people in their 30s or early 40s, you give them enough notice to say, we're going to raise the age limit before you start receiving Social Security. When Social Security was first passed, the life expectancy was 19 years less than it is now, but we haven't raised the age of being able to receive that. I think that's an obvious way to that's fair, that can help offset some of those costs. Obamacare is a huge cost to our national debt. That it's unfortunate that hasn't been part of the conversation, except for Senator Rand Paul, maybe Ted Cruz some too, in that the cost of what Obamacare is doing to our debt is a big issue too, and we need to rein that in. I've been a big advocate of repealing Obamacare, which is opposite of what my opponent has.
Well, Mr. Tarkanian, we really appreciate your time today. Look forward to talking to you more in the future. I know there's going to be more opportunities for us to talk personally and for you to address the folks here in Story County. Very much appreciative of your time, and good luck. We need some leadership out there in Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be on.
Okay, so that was our interview with Danny Tarkanian. We're going to listen to Dan Schwartz next talk about what he might do if he's elected as governor of Nevada in 2018.